I'm Jamie, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And I'm really glad to be here today. I'm really nervous about being up front here, so. But I'm just gonna. You guys are all family, and that's the way we're gonna handle it today. I do have to say, I am speaking on carrying the message. I am by no means an expert on carrying the message, and so what reading I've been doing for this talk today and everything, I am learning as much through that as what I hope we all will through this workshop today, through this Super Saturday today. So let me start out by just telling you a little bit about my story, how I came to OA in the first place. I am second oldest of eight children in the family. I have an older sister and six younger brothers, and we all got together on a family reunion last week, which was wonderful. So, but growing up, and still today, food was a very, very important part of our family. For the family reunion that we had last week, it was like every day was like, okay, what are we going to eat tonight? You know, where are we, whose house are we going to, and all that. And so food was just a very important part of the family growing up. I've been told that I was a little strong-willed even as a child. My mother tells me these stories all the time about how stubborn I was, even as a two-year-old. I am a born-again Christian. I grew up in the church, so I've had a relationship with God for a very long time. And but it just was not satisfying. It was not what I needed, even at that point. As near as I can figure, I started having a weight problem probably when I was about 10. I remember my father describing me as our chubby tomboy, which having six younger brothers I thought was understandable, but it still kind of hurt. I did a lot of, I hated the things at home, both at home and at school, about being weighed and measured all the time. I hated that. I mean, you go into school and you stand up in front of everybody and they have you get on the scale, and I always knew I was going to be heavier than everybody else. And I'd get on the scale at home because my mom kept a chart of all eight of us. Every 6 months we would get weighed and measured, and then I'd get the lecture about how I needed to lose weight and all this kind of stuff. So I just grew up being very, very aware of my weight growing up. I also had some very compulsive behaviors when I was growing up, even when I was younger. There was a small store that I had to walk by on my way to school. This was just in elementary school. Well, my parents had an account there because my mom would just send us down to pick up things from the store occasionally and would charge them, and then at the end of the month would pay it off. Well, I figured out one day that I could go in there and get a candy bar and just tell the woman at the store to put it on the account. Think, okay, you know, candy bars at that point were a nickel, no problem, and she's not going to know the difference. What I did not realize, and I started doing this like every other day or whatever, thinking I could get by with it and nobody was going to know. What I did not realize was two things. One of my brothers was also doing the same thing, and my mother was keeping a list at home when she would send us down of what things she was buying to charge, so she knew at the end of the month exactly how much that bill should be. The end of the month came, and she got the bill, and it was quite a bit larger than what she had anticipated, and so I got caught eventually, and I lied for 2 days about this. But no, I didn't do that. And so that was, you know, looking back now, I realize that was very, very compulsive behavior. That was an indication, even at that point, that I was addicted to food. As I grew up during my teen years, I had very low self-esteem, both because of my weight and because of some abuse issues that were going on, I didn't feel like I measured up to others in the family, and so I felt like I was always getting criticized because I wasn't the Susie homemaker that my older sister was and just all that kind of stuff. So I went into adulthood with very low self-esteem and just feeling like I had to be perfect. I got married when I was 19, went into my marriage to my husband Gary with the idea that I was going to be the perfect wife and the perfect mother. We have been married for 36 years in September, so he has put up with a lot of compulsive behaviors for me over the years. But for a long, long time, I was going to be the perfect wife and the perfect mother. I have two children, a son and a daughter, and even when they were little, it was like, oh, we have to do this, we have to do this. And I had books where I would look at to see where they should be in their development. And if they weren't at a certain age, then I would work really hard to make sure they were at that point in their development. I couldn't just have a normal birthday party for them. I learned how to decorate cakes so that they could have the perfect cake for their birthday. I did home daycare for 15 years, and so I would decorate cakes for each of the kids, each of my daycare kids, which was up to 12 different kids at some point. I would do decorating cakes for them. Everything I did, my church activity, my home activity, everything, I felt like I had to be perfect. And obviously I wasn't doing that. And I was also going out at that point, I would go, say I was going to go run an errand or something and run by one of the fast food places to pick up something to eat. That was the beginning of my addiction to fast food. I also during that time realized that I was suffering from depression. I tried to ignore it for a very long time, finally talked to the doctor about it, got on some medication that I thought, okay, a couple of weeks on this and I'll be fine. And that didn't work. There were issues there that I was not dealing with. Eventually got into some therapy to deal with the depression and the low self-esteem and things like that. Tried all of the weight loss programs, anything out there I tried. Was getting pressure at that point both from my mom and my husband to lose weight, which did not help, but I didn't understand myself what was going on, so I could not help them to understand what was going on. About the time that my kids were upper elementary into high school, I quit the daycare business. I went back to work, and everybody thought, oh, this will be perfect because she'll be out of the house. She'll be able to lose weight now that she's not around the food and stuff all the time. Well, any of you that work in an office know, or any place, know that that's not going to happen. You know, food is being brought in most of the time by me because I love to cook and bake and everything, and that was another way that I found that I could set up this image of being perfect because I was the perfect baker and I loved to cook and I was good at it. And so I would bring in all these goodies so everybody would just ooh and ah over these goodies and, you know, then I could eat some of them too. So I continued to eat. My weight continued to go up. My children were in high school by then. I was very ashamed of my appearance. I was not able to participate in activities with them as much as what I would have liked to, both because of my own low self-esteem and image of myself, and also because at that point my weight was also beginning to cause some pretty serious health problems. I developed diabetes a few years after that. I have a family history of arthritis, and so I had a tendency towards that anyway, and of course my weight just exacerbated the whole problem. So still was trying a lot of different diets and everything. I even was in OA for a couple of years, and lost weight while I was there, but then I got away from that, you know, left that, figured I could do this on my own now, and just really didn't follow through on it. At that point, I was making some real breakthroughs, or began making some breakthroughs as far as my therapy, and just peeling off layers of shame and the issues with the depression and things like that. And so that was really helping me, but it was not helping as far as my relationship with God. I was still very active in my church. I went to church every Sunday and heard about the Bible, and I studied the Bible. I went through this all the time. I was going to be a better Christian. I was going to read the Bible more. I was going to attend Bible studies. I was going to do this. I was going to do that and all this. And every time, because I was doing it on my own or trying to do it on my own, I failed. I failed miserably. And it just kept going on and on and on, the same pattern over and over and over again. Finally, 4 years ago, I reached a point in my life where the empty nest syndrome hit. My son had gotten married and moved out, and he still lives in Council Bluffs. My daughter, whom I am extremely close with, had gotten married. The day after she got married, she moved to Tennessee with her husband. And so here's this totally empty house with me and my husband in there, and my husband works nights, and so it was just, I was alone a lot in the evenings and everything. And I just knew, I was miserable. I was the heaviest I'd ever been in my life. I was angry. I was depressed. I didn't want to go out. My health problems were getting worse. I was hurt to move even at times. It just was like snowballing, and people were suggesting that I have the gastric bypass surgery, which I did not want to have. Everybody was giving me ideas, but I was just miserable. And finally, my therapist suggested that I try going back to OA, and he was familiar with it. And so I walked in the door at this church, it was my first meeting, and I knew that OA offered what I needed, but I didn't know at that point if it would work for me. It was one more weight loss program, and I just knew that I had to try it. The biggest thing that I knew that I needed was a real, genuine relationship with God. I knew that I had God with me, but it was like there was this barrier between us, and I just could not get past that. And I knew there had to be something more there. So I started out, as my usual pattern, very gung-ho. I bought every piece of literature that was on the table. I took it all home. I was going to read through all of it. I got started on a food plan, which was my diabetes food plan. Decided I was going to follow that perfectly. Did that off and on. That was kind of a honeymoon period for about 2 months. And then I never really quit coming to meetings, but I just wasn't doing anything much as far as working the steps or anything. The one thing that I did right during that time period was I kept coming to meetings. And about 10 months ago, I was kind of back to the point where I had been when I initially walked in the door. I was miserable. And I knew that the program worked for others, and I knew there had to be some way that it would work for me. So I got a different sponsor at that point. I had not been working with my sponsor, and I thought, okay, maybe a fresh start here is what I need. So I got a different sponsor, and followed her suggestions and decided what I had been doing, I realized, was I was trying to pick and choose different parts of the program that I was going to accept for me. I didn't need the whole program. I was just going to pick and choose what parts worked for me, and that doesn't work. And I found that out. And when I changed sponsors and became willing to do the whole program, it started working for me. My sponsor knew of my background. She knew of my feelings of failure with all of it. She started me out very slowly, gave me some assignments that would help me to see some success with this, which I'm very, very grateful to her for. I learned that I don't have to do this program perfectly. I can never do this program perfectly, and the world is not perfect, so I better just forget about that whole idea. I gained a willingness to try new things, which was another thing that I was not willing to do before. And I found a plan of eating that really fit my needs at the time. Since that time, that was last July or August, since that time, by the grace of God, I have totally given up chocolate, which I thought, I mean, that to me is a miracle. I was so addicted to chocolate. I would buy chocolate-covered pins. I mean, chocolate-flavored, scented pins, even, so I could smell them. Not chocolate-covered, but chocolate-scented. I don't think they do that. I have lost 60 pounds over the last 10 months. I have basically given up fast food, especially as far as eating in the car. I have a very limited thing with that, but that was another major thing. I had been addicted to fast food for so long. The other big thing in my life is that my blood sugar is lower than what it has been in 10 years. So my doctor is very, very pleased with that, too. So emotionally, I have a lot more serenity than what I've had for a very long time. I've become more accepting of myself. I'm not as angry. I don't take the hammer to myself nearly as much. It's still in my back pocket once in a while, but I'm better about leaving it there. I laugh more. I laugh more genuinely. Before, I would laugh, and it was like a mask that I had because I didn't want people to see how I was hurting on the inside. But I laugh a lot more now. And I've got a lot more gratitude. I'm on a gratitude list that we share every day, and that, too, has changed my outlook on things. And my depression is much more under control. So I'm just very grateful for what the program has done for me. I have not yet learned, as I said earlier, to carry the message as well as I should. I'm not working this program perfectly yet. Before I really started losing the weight, I have to admit that I was not a very enthusiastic representative of OA. I didn't feel like I had the right to really praise OA if I wasn't working the program. And that wasn't the right attitude, probably, but that's just where I was for a while. When I started gaining some recovery, I could see the value of working the steps. I could see the value of using the tools. And the weight loss has become kind of a natural open door for people to ask me how I'm losing the weight. And so it presents me with the opportunity of sharing OA and the message of OA and what it has done for me. And because I can see the miracle starting to take place in my life now, I feel like I can share with others about the program. Okay, so what is carrying the message in OA? The dictionary defines caring as to convey something by direct communication. You know, it's words, it's our actions, it's our attitude. That all is a part of carrying the message. It's a matter of being open and honest with people. Not perfect. I don't have to say that I'm working this program perfectly or that everything is perfect in my life now, because it's not. But I can be open and honest with people, both about my successes and with the areas that I still struggle with. So that is, to me, one of the most important parts of carrying the message, because if we only tell about the good parts of our life, we're not real to other people that are still struggling. And I want to be real. When I first walked into the rooms, people were real with me, and I want to be real with them. The message is that there is freedom from compulsive overeating. There is a solution with this program. Whether your problem is that you are a compulsive overeater, if you have a food addiction, if you're bulimic, anorexic, whatever, there is freedom from that. And that's the message that I want to be sharing with other people. What does the Big Book and the OA 12 and 12 have to say about carrying the message? The main thing that I read in there is that we have to carry the message and give away what we have in order to keep our recovery. It is essential. This is not an option. If I am going to stay in recovery, I have to be giving away the message. Do I really believe the Big Book when it says that carrying the message will bring about my own recovery? That's a question I have to ask myself. you know, if I'm not sharing the message, do I really believe what the big book says about that? And if I don't believe that, how can I believe that the other things that the book will say about the program, that the steps are necessary, or that I can pick and choose what I want? I have to believe that. The big book says that we are carrying the message to those who still suffer. That includes newcomers. And I would like to just stop here for a minute. If you don't mind, anybody that is here for their first, second, or third meeting, would you please stand? I would. That's great. Thank you. And I just want you to know that you guys are the most important people here. You remind us what it means to carry the message, and I am so glad that you've taken time out of your schedules to be here today. So, but the carrying the message is not just to newcomers, it's sharing it with each other. Those who have been here for a long time still struggle, and we can help each other. Our sponsors help us, we can help others. It's not just the newcomers, it's carrying the message to each other, whether it's by phone call or in meetings or giving a hug or a note of encouragement or whatever. We need to carry this message with each other. There is a whole chapter in the big book, chapter 7, on specifics of how to carry the message, how to work with others. So I'm not going to go into that, but I just do want to share a little bit that there are negative and positive ways of carrying the message. If you walk into a meeting, or if I walk into a meeting with a grumpy Gus attitude and, you know, am argumentative and don't want to do service, and, I mean, obviously there are going to be some times when you're walking into a meeting and you're not going to be all smiles and everything. But if that is the pattern of my life, then I'm giving an example. I'm carrying the message to others. But it's not a positive message. So I really need to be aware of that too. I can be real. I can share that I'm struggling, but I need to also be able to share the hope that I have through this program. What does carrying the message mean to me? When I first walked into a meeting, I heard people describing the compulsion, describing my compulsion, my fat, my shame, my despair, my hopelessness. You were talking about your own lives, but you were also talking about mine. And I heard that. And I was shocked. I thought nobody else felt that way, the same way that I did. But I also had this really small glimmer of hope at that point. Because then I also heard you describe your spiritual recovery. And I thought, this is where I need to be. This program has what I need. And I felt like you understood me without knowing the details of my life. And that to me was just such a relief. I felt hope. I felt loved and I felt safe when I walked into this meeting. And that was just, it was just, I walked out of there with tears in my eyes because I thought, here is the answer that I've been looking for. And I knew it. Who in my life knows that I'm in OA and knows about what OA is? When I first tried sharing OA before, it sounded even to me like this was just another vain attempt at weight loss. You know, it was, I'd said the words, but I didn't have anything to back them up with. And I know that's what other people thought when I mentioned to a couple of people that I was going to OA. I know that's what they thought. You know, you could just see it in their eyes. Oh, here she goes again. You know, wonder how long this one's going to last. And so, you know, it just, I could see that, but now I can share my experience, my hope, and the strength that God has given me because it is me. It's a part of me. It's not just words. It's not just something that's written in a book. It's not just something that somebody else has told me about. This is something that is real for me. When and why have I told them? I'm in recovery now. I am in the process of recovery, and so I can share that with others. I have more clarity of mind since I'm off the sugar. I have weight loss. I have serenity. I have just a whole better outlook on life, and I can share that. I can ask God for the inspiration and the direction, and then relax and not struggle with it, not worry about the outcome, know that He's going to give me the words to say. He's going to tell me when I, when and what to share with others. I am a compulsive overeater. I am recovering. And if you want, I'll help you. That, to me, is just such a cool message. And it's such a simple message that I can share with others. But in the midst of all this, I have to continually ask God for freedom for my self-will. Because if I don't, it's going to be real easy for me to fall right back into the whole pattern of this is me doing it. This is, I'm going back into the perfection mode. So that's one thing I have to continually do. What I'm not doing as far as carrying the message, and I'm just being real honest here, I still am uncomfortable about just going up to someone and saying, I know of a really good program if you'd like to come with me on this. I just am uncomfortable with that. And I want to read this that I found. It's in the Voices of Recovery. When I'm shopping, I notice the bodies that I think would benefit from what OA has to offer. I would like to go up to them and plant the seed. However, I put myself in the other person's place and wonder how I would have felt if a stranger had approached me before I was ready. The best way I know to plant a seed is to be the best example I can be of how OA is working in my life and trust that God will provide the opportunity for me to share. I also realized that I could only try to carry the message, not that I would be successful every time. Some seeds take longer to sprout than others. If it is meant to be, it will happen in God's time. And that has given me the answer that I was looking for as far as in these situations, that I can't force it, but I can make myself available. Day-by-day reality of me carrying the message. If you were going to follow me around all day, every day, for the next 2 weeks, it's not always going to be a pretty picture. I don't always read literature every day. I don't always follow the perfect food plan. I don't always turn my will over to God. Sometimes I want my will, and I just do it. So I have to look at that, too, as how I am carrying the message. And I get discouraged sometimes because I'm not doing it as well as what I think I should be. But I have to remember that this is not an overnight journey. It has to continue for a lifetime. Okay, action I need to take now. I need to carry the message in order to keep my recovery growing. I want to carry the message so that others can know the same hope and joy and freedom that I found. And I can't do it myself. There is no way that I can do this. There is no way that I could have gotten up here today and talked if I was doing this by myself. I'm powerless to do it on my own. The Big Book tells us that it's weakness, not strength, that is what saves us in this program. And I have to admit to that every time it crosses my mind, every decision that I make, every time I have to make a choice, I have to acknowledge that I'm weak. I cannot do it on my own. My attitude is not to fix others, but to share the good news of what this program offers us. It's not what I get out of it, but what I can bring to it to let God work through me. My personal responsibility is that I may be able to relate to someone in a way that no one else can. And I'm not going to know that. God will direct me to the people and give me the words that I need if I'm going to carry the true message. So I just have to make myself open and listen to that voice when he says, I want you to go talk to that person. I'll argue with him sometimes. It's like, God, I don't want to do that. I'm busy right now, but I'm learning to listen. Someone passed this program on to me, this hope on to me, and I have a responsibility to pass it on to others. I won't ever forget, or I'm trying not to ever forget, that if they had gone on with their life and forgotten about people like me, I wouldn't be here today. So I have the responsibility to continue doing that as well. I have so much gratitude for what this program has given me. How can I not be willing to give it back to others? My sponsor now has urged me to become a sponsor, and I keep thinking, I'm not ready. I don't know enough. I can't do this. But when I think that way, have I forgotten my gratitude for the people who've been available for me? Can I say that I don't have enough time to sponsor somebody? The Big Book doesn't say anything about sponsoring only somebody only in our spare time. I don't think I've read that any place in the Big Book, unfortunately. So now I am gratefully following in the footsteps of others, and I'm grateful but a little scared at the responsibility of leaving footsteps of my own for others to follow. My final question is, what will you take from here today? Experience, I hope, not opinions, not my opinions. Progress, not my expertise. And trust in the future, not regrets over the past. And I'd like to read one more thing here real quick. I listened to a talk show on the local radio station. The guests were three members of OA. As they spoke, I realized that I was hearing for the first time an exact description of my disease. How do I feel reading that? Hearing me and responding to that broadcast and the life of the person who wrote about it. What if there had been no broadcast to hear? I do not like to think that I've been hiding behind the do what you can when you can. But have I been letting myself off too easily from 12-step work? Could I bring the needs of those who do not know about OA into my prayer and meditation? Should I raise the question of a 12-step project in my home group? Is it time to answer telephones? Getting honest with myself about my eating was the beginning of this great improvement in the quality of my life. What might happen to the quality of my life if I get honest with myself about step 12? What can I do in the next 24 hours to reach another sufferer? Making this program better known is partly up to me. Now, there are the little slogan cards. I would just like to encourage you to make sure that you've got those. Get extras. We've got plenty of extras. So we'll put them up here on one of the tables during the break. Make sure that you get extras and exchange them with others in the room. That's part of carrying the message. That's why we want you to put your name and phone number on the back of them. Exchange them with somebody in the room, maybe somebody you don't know, so that you've got phone numbers and you can carry the message back and forth to others. So, thank you.
Thank you so much, Jane.